Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a recipe or an email, you can contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. You can also look at our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent five, are at our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to be talking about cynicism. And last time we talked about happiness. And it's kind of like, well, this is the perhaps, well, quite a few people wrote in and said maybe that's the flip side. And let's talk about that. Let's see if it is. I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. So we're going to do what we often do on these shows, and we're going to define what we mean by cynicism within the context of negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, a workshop, a seminar, whatever it is that we're doing, but a group participation event to come to a negotiated and successful conclusion. So let's talk about what it is within that context so we know that we're all on the same page and all have the same, we're all going forward in the same direction. Yeah. So what is cynicism within this context? Oh, I see we have lots of wonderful definitions. You know what? This is an interesting point. Polly and others are saying, and it's a perfectly reasonable definition, that cynicism is a realistic view of human nature. A realistic view of human nature. Well, that's kind of, that's rather cynical. No, it's a realistic view. We don't just assume that people are always good, and hopefully we don't assume that they're always bad, but a realistic, we look at them realistically. You know, it's a very good trait when you're dealing with people and new participants especially, and you have to think about what it is that they are really saying. Yeah. And we've got quite a few people who are, Gus and others, and thank you for all of your participation, who are saying that cynicism is when you think that everyone has selfish motives. You look for the self-interest in people's actions and words and their motives. Everyone has selfish motives. You know, it's a really good point. And we tend to, and we've talked about this before, we tend to look to see the motivation of our participants. Because how will we understand what it is that we all really want and how we're going to get there? Because oftentimes, and we've discussed this before, and thank you for all of your participation, yes, it is true that we have decided that although participants in a group might have the same goal, the same outcome in mind as their successful goal, but they might want it for different reasons. Yeah, the outcome might be the same. They might want, for example, a law to change in a certain way. But the reasons that people want it within the group might be different. And you have to look to their motivation in order to find out how we're going to make the process a successful one and get to a successful goal. So you think that everyone, you have a realistic view of human nature, and when you think that everyone has selfish motives, well, I think people are self-motivated, don't you? Yeah. I mean, we all are. We all have reasons for wanting something, and it's good to be able to think about them. Suna and others are saying it's, cynicism is when you only act from self-interest. Well, only, well, primarily maybe, when you only act from self-interest. Mm-hmm. You know, quite a few people are echoing this. I don't know that sin, well, let's talk about this. We've got quite a few people voting with Edward who says that cynicism is looking for the bad in everyone instead of the good. Looking for the bad in everyone instead of the good. You know, we've got quite a bit of agreement with that. And thank you for all of your participation. I don't know, is self-motivation bad? Well, not necessarily, right? We could be motivated to make right a social wrong, for example. Yeah, motivated because we, well, people are saying because we want to get in good with God, essentially speaking. That might be a reason. That's self-motivation in its way. But it's not really, self-motivation is not necessarily bad, right? Well, it's looking for the bad in everyone instead of the good. People are still going for that's looking for a motive that's not just pure. Well, okay. I always say that we learn something on these shows, and they are organic. We go wherever it is that the conversation takes us. And I suppose that basically speaking, I tend to be an optimist rather than a cynic. I tend to think that people want to get together for a common good because even though it's self-motivated, it's a good motive. It's not a bad one. But, you know, it depends how you define bad. You know, people are saying that mainly the motivation for most participants is monetary. And even if you're not literally getting paid, which quite frankly, often we are, right? Because we're the third party impartial, and one of our, in fact, maybe our only motivation for being there is a self-motivation, right? And the other participants can think of that in a rather cynical manner. We're getting paid. Yeah, our motivation is income, is salary, is to get a good reputation perhaps, being a successful negotiator. Successful mediator. And yeah, that I'll give it that self-motivation. Mm-hmm. And the participants know it and view us through a realistic, maybe even cynical lens. Perhaps they think we don't care. We're only in it to get paid. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, actually. People are saying that a lot of times participants, and I guess it has to do with your reputation. I have been in business a really long time, and so I have a reputation of not doing this, but, you know, people probably sometimes think it, that your participants, it's not just the leader who has a cynical idea, an idea that people are self-motivated, but the participants think it about each other, and they think it about us. They think it about the leader. And one of the things that I see a lot of people truly perceive that the participants and the clients think is that we are self-motivated by money, right? Because we don't have an actual interest in the outcome, although we have an interest in it being successful, so we'll get hired again. But the participants or the clients might think that since we get paid by the hour, we're having an awful lot of hours for the process. Might I add just as an aside that since I'm the leader of this show, can I add as an aside that you want a good reputation and you want to be popular, hired again, you will create a reputation where people don't think that about you. Yeah, that's just an aside. And I know that that's kind of hard, but I make my reputation on not extending the process past where it needs to be. We work really, really hard to get to an outcome fairly promptly. And as we'll talk about, and we talk about after every show, of course, one of the ways to do that is the networking timeouts so that we can go around individually to the participants and get them to think in a different manner than they've been thinking, especially if there have been some, well, some less than stellar behavior for a minute there, which we're going to stop and keep and work it around so it's successful. So anyway, looking for the bad, well, I don't know that self-motivation is always bad instead of the good. This is an interesting point, too. George and others are saying yes to looking for the bad instead of the good, but that the good is the self-motivation. So you look for that. You really look for the good because it's not bad. Does that make sense? That it's good to understand how come people are there. And that's not looking for the bad. It's just being realistic and trying to find out what people want. Yeah. You know, it's true that the word cynicism has a negative connotation, right? It kind of does. It if you're a cynic, it means that you don't trust anybody, kind of, right? And perhaps that was an inadvertently negative title to the show. And we should have called it realism, being realistic, and understanding motivation. Yeah. So, you know, now that we've decided kind of what it is, let's talk about whether cynicism, or dare we call it a realistic attitude, which would be more of a positive way of saying it. And we've talked about, right, you know, I'm getting a lot of agreement about that, that it's really cynicism, the way I phrased it, is negative, but it's really not a negative trait. And let's talk about it as a leadership tool. So is cynicism being looking for the underlying motive, the self-motivation of the participants, is that an effective leadership tool? Should we be more cynical? Should I be more cynical? Maybe I should. I tend to go in optimistically. I tend to think that everybody is there for the greater good. And then we work it around to find out why they're really there. You know, surprisingly enough, quite a few people, well, it depends. I'm going to say it depends again. People are, quite a few, thank you for all your participation. Quite a few people are asking if I really do see groups that are there for the greater good. And they're not really self-motivated in the sense of monetary, for example. And the answer is it depends. Because it depends on the group that you're dealing with. If you are dealing with a workplace requirement, well, they're there so they can keep their job. Is that a negative reason? No, but it's an upfront reason. Yeah. They're there so that they can be checked off on a box, that they've learned how to do something, right? And they fulfill the requirement. That's an entirely different group of people than people who have gotten together for a voluntary reason, do something. And a lot of times groups that have gotten together that I see that get together for a voluntary reason are doing so because they want to change something for the better. Especially if they're two, or maybe 18. I've dealt with lots of big groups too, but if they are charitable nonprofit type organizations, and they all would like something to happen, the last time we did this with a whole bunch of them was they needed a law to be changed, a regulation, a reporting regulation that was a real nuisance, hard to do, and was quite, it impaired doing good in the world. It impaired their abilities to function. And they all needed it to be changed. Was that a economic reason? I guess so, because it was costing money and preventing some donations. So yeah, there was a self-motivation. But the real motivation really was with these people that how are we going to go forth and do good if we're being impaired by a draconian regulation? You see? So is that self-motivation? Yeah, people are saying it is. Okay. In that case, we'll call that self-motivation. Yeah, it's kind of like, yes, that's self-motivation. We're going to stay in business and be successful at what it is that we're doing if we don't have to be bogged down. All right, self-motivation, we'll go for it. We're gonna call that an effective leadership tool in that case. Yes, we've all got the same idea, and we want to stay in business. So let's talk about this. Is cynicism an effective leadership tool? And I am getting a resounding yes from you guys. Thank you for all of your participation. Geraldine says, yes, it's an effective leadership tool, and a lot of people are agreeing with this, when it's used in moderation to set realistic goals. Yeah, you can't be always looking for the, oh, why are they doing this? It must be self-motivated and really digging like that. But if it's used in moderation and it helps us to understand what it is that people want and why they want it, yeah, it's an effective leadership tool. Is when used in moderation to set realistic goals. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about this, too, at the beginning of, by the way, if you'd like to hear prior shows, the last five archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com, all of the shows archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Yeah, so we're thinking about this, and we're going, yeah, to set a realistic goal, because at the beginning of our meetings, of our discussions, of whatever it is that we're doing, we try to determine where we're headed, right? A lot of you call it a mission statement, and yes, I do agree with it. I don't like to label it, because mission statement to me means that we've taken a bunch of hours to hammer out three sentences. And that might be a good idea. Or we might be able to agree basically of the same mind that this is where we're headed without having to do that. So, Recipe for Peace Now has no actual rules about what you need to do step by step. We talk about it as a process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, used in moderation, it's realistic goals. And your realistic goals might change when you find out what people want and need, right? Yeah. James says that cynicism is an effective tool because it helps to understand participant underlying motives. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we strive for, right? How will we know how to push the process forward if we don't understand what the participants want? And as James says, their underlying motives. Mm-hmm. Have to listen very carefully, right? Yeah, cynicism is an effective leadership tool when it helps us to understand participant underlying motives. Mm-hmm. Mayako is making an interesting point, too, that goes with understanding underlying motives. She says that cynicism is an effective leadership tool when used to determine what participants desire the outcome to accomplish. What participants desire the outcome to accomplish. What a good way of putting it. Because sometimes we have an outcome in mind, a goal, that is, for example, for like my prior example, changing or deleting the word in a regulation or a law. That's the goal, to do that. The real goal is what we want that outcome to accomplish, right? How we want it to affect us and others. That's the accomplishment of the goal. It's the use of the new goal that we have set. Yeah, it's the ultimate outcome. It's what we wanted. What we wanted the effect to be. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You should determine what participants desire the outcome to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we understand each other. Irwin says that cynicism is an effective leadership tool because it creates the ability to negotiate. Because you have a realistic attitude and you understand what people want. You know, it's a very good point. Cynicism creates the ability to negotiate. If we don't understand each other, if we don't understand the underlying motives and the self-motivation of the participants, we're going to have difficulty negotiating with each other because we're not going to understand what it is the people want. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, quite a few people have run with this mission statement idea. We've talked about it in the past. I'm going to say the famous words that you all say that I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the group whether or not you actually need a stated mission statement. But Cassandra's mentioning that the mission statement needs to reflect realistic goals. And it does. Because the group will get very discouraged if we have decided to do something so big or so nonspecific that it can't be accomplished. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the process shouldn't take forever, and it might you might need to divide up what needs to be done into reasonable steps, mm-hmm. and get to step one and then work from there. Uh-huh. The mission statement needs to reflect realistic goals. Good point. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael and others are saying that not only do you need to have realistic goals in your mission statement, but that a mission statement and the cynicism that kind of goes with this, so it's realistic, mm-hmm, must provide a foundation for understanding outside influences. Oh, outside influences. Provides a foundation for understanding outside influences. Little dose of cynicism there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good point, and we have indeed thought about it, that sometimes the person, the participants in the room are indeed, of course, individuals, but they are talking to and kind of reflecting the opinion of others, especially if they're rather representative of a group idea, a group reflection of a goal. You have to understand the outside influences, and that people aren't, it's not even necessarily someone's deep down personal opinion, but their self-interest relies upon satisfying the outside influence, the group that they represent. It's in their self-interest to be a good rep, to espouse that line of thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what's interesting, to get to know the individual, because you might be able to work out a negotiated compromise, if that you usually can. If the outside influence is preventing compromise and negotiation. Yeah, you need to work on it. You need to say, well, let's talk about this and find out why it is that someone is being a wee bit intransigent. Mm-hmm. So we've decided that cynicism, in the sense of being realistic and understanding people's self-motivation and underlying values and goals, is oftentimes an effective leadership tool. Yeah, we've got quite a bit of agreement there. So is it also not an effective leadership tool? We've got a no camp, too. Now, we've just talked about the yes camp and decided that, yeah, sometimes you have to look at things in a realistic manner. And there's quite a few people that are in the no camp, that you don't use cynicism as an effective leadership tool. See, it cuts both ways, right? And, you know, these are very good points, too. Zane and others say that you should not bring cynicism into the picture, because it creates a preconceived notion. Ooh, yes, we're getting this agreement that you have to be careful, right? Because you don't want to be cynical when you start out, especially with your group. You need to be realistic and look for motivations so that you can negotiate, this is true, but you don't want to have a preconceived notion. Yeah, and that applies not only to us, of course, as the leader, but to the participants as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they come with a preconceived notion of what's going to happen, a preconceived notion of how people from that group act and what they think. And, yeah, and really people are saying that that's bias and bigotry. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, aren't those really staunchly held preconceived notions, negative ones? Right. So that's really what that is. It's being immovable. Well, we can always move them, but it's going to be tougher because of a preconceived notion. Mm-hmm. And we'll assume that the preconceived notion is negative. Although sometimes I go in with you got to remember to think about this as the leader, right? And be really self-aware that you're not coming in with a preconceived notion, but you're coming in with a realistic negotiation stance with these particular participants. Often, I really work on not having a negative preconceived notion, but you know what sneaks up on me? The positive ones. Yeah. And then I'm kind of disappointed in people. Yes. Sometimes you have a positive preconceived notion, and I think that's kind of good, right? Yeah. People are saying, well, that's kind of good to go in with a positive preconceived notion. It's preconceived nonetheless, though, and we need to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. Good point. Danielle and others are saying that you have a positive preconceived notion, usually when you have before the participants in a prior, and they were quite... It went well. They were quite reasonable, and you thought that they were really good participants and like that. And then it's a completely different issue, and they're being intransigent. You go, gee, and we worked so well together the last time. Let's get that back. Yeah. So, when is the leadership cynicism not an effective leadership tool? Mm-hmm. Anna says that the leader needs to be unbiased and non-judgmental. Yeah, non-judgmental. Remember that we are the impartial third party. Non-judgmental. Even if you think one side, I mean, we're human, right? We've got really opinions. But even if you think one side or one issue is truly like a non-issue, but it's being put forth, everybody needs their turn, right? Yeah. So you have to be careful to be unbiased, but especially non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. Yeah. George says that if leadership is not an effective, George says that cynicism is not an effective leadership tool because you need to listen openly and be willing to be surprised by the good. Oh, what a nice way of putting it. Yeah. You need to listen openly and be willing to be surprised by the good. Yeah. Pleasantly surprised that people are really not self-motivated, but really motivated to change something for the better. Yeah. You know, it's wonderful. I'm afraid that I know a lot of people like that. They want to make things better in the world. Mm-hmm. And they have the skill and the ability, and they're willing to donate it. And it's wonderful. Yeah. Need to listen openly and be willing to be surprised by the good. Mm-hmm. Noel and others are saying that cynicism is not an effective leadership tool because you have a duty to be fair to all sides and not take personal advantage of the situation. Wow, good point. We might have a self-motivation that we see as an opportunity, but we shouldn't take advantage of anyone. We're the leader, for heaven's sakes. You have a duty to be fair to all sides and not take personal advantage of the situation. I think that that's a really good way of putting it. Maybe if you're a cynic, you might try. I think we should go for optimism. And as a corollary to that, Leonard and others are saying you have a duty to prevent participants from taking unfair advantage of each other or of another, maybe even of an outside person. But they've gotten together and decided, well, this would be advisable. No. Mm-hmm. we are going to look for the good and be surprised by it, as George says. We have a duty to be fair to all sides and not take personal advantage of the situation. I think that's a real fair fiduciary duty that Noel has hit upon. And it's a way to make your reputation, too, as good. Mm-hmm. They have a duty to prevent participants from taking unfair advantage of another. You're the leader. You're supposed to say, nope, we're not going to do that. Because it is an unfair advantage. And if you take an unfair advantage, it will come back to haunt you. Yeah. Now, some of the, well, there's a discussion, and then it's a good point, about what's unfair, especially when dealing with outsiders who you're trying to get to do something. Well, if it's unscrupulous, if it is taking advantage of a weakness unfairly, mm-hmm. Oftentimes when we get into the process, we get into a mediation, an arbitration, an alternative dispute resolution, and we get together as a group and we discuss what needs to be done, there's an advantage that could be taken by both sides. And the idea is to understand it and to help us to use it to bring the sides together in a negotiated compromise. Mm-hmm. Because the idea, of course, that we are promoting, but that really works and is workable in the real world, mm-hmm, is that there is no winner and a loser. We've all given something. We've all gained something. And now we have a solution, a goal that has been met, that we can all work with, mm-hmm, could work with sincerely and not just give lip service to. Yeah. So that's the idea of preventing either side or ourselves from taking advantage of a situation. Mm-hmm. I think people are asking this question. It's a very good question. And we've kind of thought about it, but let's think about it more clearly. A lot of people, and thank you for all of your participation, are asking if cynicism is synonymous, the same as being realistic concerning the negotiated outcome. Is it the same? Are cynicism and being realistic concerning the negotiations and the outcome, are we talking about the same thing? Mm-hmm. Is that the same? Mm-hmm. Again, some people are saying yes, and I can accept that. That, yeah, that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about taking a realistic attitude so that we can understand the benefits to each participant and the negative to each participant. So we understand why they're taking their position. It's a realistic thought. Mm-hmm. Krista says it's not the same, cynicism and realism and being realistic. Not the same, because cynicism is negative, but you do have to be realistic and understand that the process may need a series of steps. Oh, I like that. Cynicism and being realistic are not the same, because cynicism is negative. We've decided it kind of is. It's looking for the bad in people instead of the good. But you do have to be realistic and understand that the process may need a series of steps. Good point. A lot of times we talk about breaking down the process into various steps and then going forward from there, because if you take on the whole, you won't get there. But if you take it on piece by piece, you'll get there faster. You'll get to your goal, to your successful goal. Realistic and understand that the process may need a series of steps. Good point. Yeah. Realistic is just looking at all sides and saying, you know, this is what we've got to work with. This is what we'd like to get to work with, and negotiate it. Mm-hmm. maybe even bring out in some outsiders, some experts. People are talking about bringing in outsiders to prevent cynicism from being negative and to make it more of a realistic attitude to reach the desired goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, series of steps, too. Mm-hmm. Abby says that it's not really the same because you have to understand through non-judgmental discussion and research the differing opinions. Mm-hmm. That you need to be realistic, and you need to understand through non-judgmental discussion and research the differing opinions. Mm-hmm. Especially at the beginning, when we truly often have very differing opinions of how we should reach the desired outcome. People are pretty far apart. And then as we negotiate, as we discuss, as we do some, as Abby says, research and listen, mm-hmm, have to understand through non-judgmental discussion. Remember the word non-judgmental in there. Mm-hmm. That how we're going to reach our goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Philip and others are making the good point that cynicism and being realistic are somewhat the same because self-interest is a motivator to come to a successful conclusion. I like it. Thank you. Self-interest is a motivator to come to a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfectly valid motivator, right? Yeah. It's not even necessarily negative. It might be a very good thing. Mm-hmm. Self-interest is a motivator to come to a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. You know, Manny and others are making a very good point. Manny says that if the participants didn't have a personal interest, usually it's not, might not even be monetary, then they wouldn't be there. If the participants didn't have a personal interest, then they wouldn't be there. Exactly. Yay. You don't just wander into a group that you have no personal interest in. Oh, all right. We've got a lot. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. With one exception, yes. And that's the mandatory group. But even that has a self-interest, right? You need to complete it to keep your job. Not much more. There's not a much of a bigger self-interest than that. Yeah, you need to get the certificate. Mm-hmm. If the participants didn't have a personal interest, then they wouldn't be there. That's a very realistic idea. And it's not a cynicism one, because it's not negative. It's just recognizing that there's personal interest. Mm-hmm. And we've discussed that it might not even be monetary. You have to think about it. Jennifer says that you need to find and fulfill the motivation to reach a negotiated goal. Need to find and fulfill that participant motivation to reach a negotiated goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look to the motivation. Because if Manny says if the participants didn't have a personal interest, they wouldn't be there. So what's their motivation? And then we'll know how to reach a negotiated goal. Mm-hmm. Dave and others are making a very good point that we tend to think of motivation and self-interest and like that in rather a negative way. But he says it's not a bad motivation. It can just be a different one. It's illegal. But we'll assume that our people are not in some way criminals. And that nothing is a bad motivation. It's just a different one. But with the outcome that we want is the same. Therefore, we will work together. Not a bad motivation. Mm-hmm. And Celine and others are making a point that, of course, very dear to Recipe for Peace Now's heart. And yes, we're headed towards the end of the show in the networking. And people are asking about the recipes because, you know, sometimes, and a lot of you have been here before, and it is true, we get so interested in our discussion that we forget to do the recipe part. And we've got just a wee bit more time, and I think we're going to make it. And Celine, which is a really good intro to this, says that the key to being realistic and to keeping a healthy cynicism and to understanding the underlying motivations and to finding the good, finding the workable, finding what it is that will cause us to reach our goal, our mission statement, so to speak, is that we need to interact. And that really is the key to it, because we need to view each other as people, right? And not as stand-ins for an organization opinion or something like that. We need to view each other as individuals, and that's how we'll find out our motivations. What it is we'd really want? What it is we're really saying? Why it is that we're here is really the point. As Manny says, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have a personal interest. But what's the personal interest? Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I find ordinary come out and ask, I don't like subtlety that much. You know why? Because it's subtle. So, and one of the ways to interact and get to know each other and our motivations, get to know each other as individuals, is to deal with each other as individuals, to deal with each other outside of the actual formal say it in front of everybody discussion. And oftentimes, if we also could use some timeouts with a negotiation, right? A timeout to regroup, to rethink, to consider what we're doing and what the group is doing. And the best way to do that is to have a little bit of food, because it keeps everybody in the room. And it keeps everybody, could talk about the food. It's a neutral. And I'm going to, yes, I'm about to say the same thing that I say every single show because it's so important. The food in Recipe for Peace Now's opinion is a tool to get us together. It gives us something to do together that's non-judgmental and non-adversarial in any way, right? Right. I mean, we might be hungry, but it's still a tool. And it keeps us in the room. And it keeps us talking to each other. And it gives us, the leader, a chance to separate out maybe the differing people and give them, talk to them a little bit privately about, well, about their response, perhaps, and like that. Yeah, without embarrassing anyone in front of the whole group. So we've decided now that we're going to have some food, right? Right, because it's a good thing. You're going to have food. You need to take a survey amongst the participants and ask if anyone has a food allergy, a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to some sort of food. Very, very, very important to know this. We don't want anyone to not have a good time. Also, when you bring the food, you will ask people to label it. Not what it's called, meatloaf, but what's in it, so that we can make a judgment as to whether or not it's something we can eat. Yeah, label it. Also, and I know that this is my little idea because I really hate parties where they run out of food. Yeah, it's a bad party. And, of course, what we're really doing, we're making a convivial atmosphere. I think that the host, which is usually us, should have a little extra, because if people are bringing, sometimes people don't bring enough, right? And I also think that we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what is a safe recipe? Well, we've taken the survey, right? And the participants, none of them would be unable to eat it, as far as we can determine. It doesn't have too many ingredients, and the ingredients would be familiar to my people. Now, of course, I'm in the States, and this is a global show. So what's familiar food to my folk might not be familiar to you, so substitute something else. But the people that usually I would see would have eaten the ingredients in the safe recipe and would know that they can. Wouldn't get kind of a nasty surprise. Right. So here's this time's safe recipe. Yeah, I know. They usually tend to be simpler, too. You know, it's a good point. People are saying the safe recipes are also easier and faster. Yeah, usually they are because they have less ingredients. And quite frankly, I'm truly appreciative of people that bring something really complicated that took them quite a while to make and has layers and all sorts of wonderful things to any potluck. And, oh, we all gather around. And, wow, how'd you make that? That's wonderful. Somebody brought a fancy strudel to the other day. I was like, wow, you made that with all the layers. Just fantastic. Each layer had been buttered and had the delicious crumbs and like that all the way through. Oh, my God. And I appreciate that. I think it's absolutely wonderful and astonishing, and I just don't have the time to do it. So these are really simple recipes mostly, and it's because I think that we'll do it if it's not too hard. And this is also one that's capable of bringing completely cooked and rewarming, or taking in a kind of sealed, wrapped up warmly so that it doesn't have to be real hot. Because sometimes you just don't have the facilities to rewarm something, right? Right. Okay. So this is going to be a pasta with zucchini. I really like the winter vegetables, especially when they're mixed with cheese. Oh, well. Yeah. And this is very simple. It looks nice. And I am, those of you who have been with me before, and thank you for returning, and I see there's lots, and thank you for the new people, and thank you all for your participation. I favor a pasta that is individual and not long and hard to get out of the bowl. After all, we're just going to go by with a spoon and scoop some onto our plate. So I favor like a rotini or a bow tie or something like that that is easy to handle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not like a fettuccine or spaghetti or something. It's perfectly nice. It tastes lovely, but it's hard to handle. Mm-hmm. So I would use some sort of an individual pasta, like a rotini or a bow tie. You know, around here, and if you make your own pasta, you'll be a much finer person than I am. I just buy it. In the States, and I imagine in a lot of places, there are like tricolor rotini, different little flavors in them and stuff. Very nice with this because it's a very simple dish, and the extra flavor doesn't impede. So anyway, we're going to have, let's get 2 pounds of our nice pasta. We're going to boil it al dente, and we're going to drain it, and we're going to set it aside nice and warm. People tell me that, ask me if they set it aside and it gets cold, well, you can rewarm it. Quite frankly, I use a microwave, but that's just me. But you can put it back like in an oven or something to rewarm it. So we've got 2 pounds of our pasta. Let's get 3 nice big pats of butter, which I think is like 3 ounces. 3 garlic cloves that we're going to crush. You think I use too much garlic, then use less. Sometimes people think that. Let's have 2 pounds of zucchini that we're going to grate. Mm-hmm. Make small so that it permeates with the pasta, because this is a very simple dish. Really, we're mixing the pasta, the garlic, and the zucchini, essentially speaking, with some cheese. So 2 pounds of zucchini, let's grate it. Using a food processor, make it, you know, I suppose there is a grate key on some of them, but you know what, make it small. Mm-hmm. And let's have a cup of grated Parmesan. Yum, yum, yum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, around here it actually comes like that. It comes grated. If not, that's what the food processor again is for. Or if you want to be ambitious and get muscles in your arms, you can, of course, do this with a manual grater. Good idea. Okay, we've got our pasta already cooked, right? Right. We're going to now heat that nice butter in a, let's do it in like a big pot, because we're going to throw the pasta in on the top of this and not make ourselves more dishes than we need to make. So we're going to heat those 3 nice big pats of butter. Might need a little extra. Kind of a low heat. You know how butter starts to kind of bubble? We're going to reach that point. We're going to add the garlic. Cook it for about a minute until it smells really nice. And it's all nice and softened, you know, cooked through. Now, remember that zucchini that we've got all grated? We're going to add that. Basically speaking, going to stir fry it. We're going to move it all around in the pot until it's all nice and cooked, until it's nice and soft. It takes, what, about 3 minutes? It's not very long. In fact, this is one of those recipes where you could do it in the room with everybody as a nice group activity if you had the facilities. And you'd come, of course, with everything pre-grated, right? Right. And the pasta pre-cooked. So we're going to add the zucchini. We're going to cook it in with the garlic and the butter. Turn it all around, nice and soft. We're going to now add the pasta to our zucchini mixture. We're going to take ourselves a nice big spoon because we don't want to break it all up. And we're going to mix it all around so it's all integrated. Oh, yummy. And now we're going to, well, you might even transfer it to a bowl at this moment because we're going to add the Parmesan while it's hot at kind of the last minute. So we're now going to add the Parmesan and we're going to toss it again so it's all incorporated. Oh, so delicious and so easy. What we've really done is we've cooked the pasta, we've cooked the garlic and the zucchini, we've mixed it all together and we've thrown some cheese in it. How can it be simpler? And it's delicious, and everybody likes it, and it will travel. I do think that if you're going to take it with you, and there's a way to heat the pasta and zucchini, that part, I would put the Parmesan in kind of last minute so it doesn't get kind of gummy. Yeah. It needs to be warm to incorporate the Parmesan so that it melts. But you do that kind of at the last minute so that it hasn't congealed somewhere along the line. Delicious, very popular. And it is our safe recipe unless someone can't eat dairy. And that's an entirely different topic, right? Right. Yeah. So now let's go on to our adventure recipe. Oops, we're running out of time. That's all right. We'll get there. Let's have our adventure recipe really fast. Why is this an adventure recipe? Well, it's got sausage. Now, you can substitute something for the sausage. You can substitute maybe chicken or something so that you can make this more of a safe recipe. But I got to tell you, sausage is really delicious, isn't it? So maybe you might think about that. But you could substitute sausage or seasoned ground meat. Substitute chicken, excuse me. Remember that whatever it is you substitute, pardon me, gets cooked through before we put it in the oven. So you cook it in the pan. Pardon me, took a little sip of water there. So, this is a sausage pasta. Sausage and cheese pasta, excuse me. Let's have a pound of sausage. I favor always the sweet, none too spicy kind because I always think that you can add heat with a condiment. But I like to have the basic thing be a little bit more bland, so I would pick a sweet sausage. Mm-hmm. Let's have a pound of pasta that is also in pieces. We discussed that we don't use fettuccine or spaghetti. Mm-hmm. I like the rotini because I think they're pretty. Bow tie's pretty, too. So a pound of it. Let's cook it. Let's drain it. Let's set it aside. We're going to have an 8-ounce package of cream cheese that we're going to cut into cubes and soften. Please do not use anything that is like a diet cream cheese. It's just not the same. That Neufchâtel cheese thing, it just won't cook. Use the real kind that comes in the little rectangular package around here at least. Uh-huh. So an 8-ounce package. If where you are, they don't come like that. Use 8 ounces, half pound. Let's have a cup of pitted olives. Mm-hmm. I like the black ones. You can choose as you wish. A cup of shredded mozzarella. We're going to need a tablespoon of butter and a tablespoon of flour just to thicken the sauce. And then let's have a tablespoon of, I like sage in this. It's just delicious, and it gives it a little extra herbal flavor to it. If you're using fresh, you use about a tablespoon, right? You know that dried is much more pungent than fresh. So you would use half as much. You would use a teaspoon if you're going to use dried and you're going to crumble it. You might also use it like an Italian seasoning if you've got kind of a mixture there. But dried is much more pungent than fresh. And we do have, you judge it by how spicy your sausage was. Don't use real spicy, but you judge about the sage. There's such a thing around here as sage sausage, and it goes really nice with the sage. A cup and a half of half and half. Do not use anything thinner because it won't make a nice sauce. Let's get ourselves a nice medium tomato that we're going to slice very thin. We're going to put it over the top. It's going to look lovely. And a half cup of Parmesan shredded. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we might as well preheat the oven so that it's hot, 350. We're going to cook the sausage and crumble it all up. You might need to remove a casing, depending on what type you're using. But the idea is we're going to crumble it, cook it in the skillet, drain it, and we're going to put the pasta. We're going to combine the sausage, the cooked pasta, the cream cheese, the olives, and the mozzarella. Going to mix them all around. Remember the cream cheese has been cubed and softened? Yeah. Remember to do that? Yes, I do soften the cream cheese in the microwave. In the United States, however, remember that cream cheese comes in a little tin foil packet? Remember not to put that in the microwave. I did it once. It wasn't a pretty picture. I forgot completely. I'm like, I'm going to soften the cream cheese. I threw it right in the microwave. Went, ooh, that's not good. Makes an interesting spark, though. Never mind. So we've got all of our stuff. We've got our cooked sausage. We just cooked it, right? We drained off the sausage fat because it's not going to be any good for this. And we're going to combine the sausage, the cooked pasta, the cream cheese, which is soft and cubed, the olives, and the mozzarella cheese. Yum, yum, yum. All combined. It's already delicious, right? So now we're going to take our smaller saucepan. We're going to melt the butter. We're going to stir in the flour and the sage. Stir it all around. Make it like, is that a roux? Yeah, I suppose. And then we're going to add our half and half. You know, I just throw it in. You can add it slowly if you'd like, but it won't curdle, I hope. But you stir it as you're doing it. Add the milk. Add the half and half. Stir, 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 stir. We're going to cook and stir it until it gets nice and thickened and bubbly. Mm-hmm. Nice and hot. A little bit thickened because of the flour and like that. Now, you remember our pasta mixture, which has all the good stuff in it? We're going to put our cream, so to speak, our sauce, we're going to mix it into our pasta with the sausage and the whole bit. And we're going to stir it kind of gently. We're going to kind of like fold it. Excuse me, I'm going to say, pardon me, seems to be that season around here. Pardon me. Thank you. People are saying, bless you. So we're going to stir it all around. Mm-hmm. I'd use a big, like a spatula or a big spoon because we don't want to break anything up. Pardon me. You may not have it all yummy and delicious. You think it's done, but it's not because we're going to bake it. We're going to put it into a nice big, like a 2-quart casserole, a nice big casserole, maybe a little bigger than like a 3-quart. I like to have a really big pot because sometimes I run out of room and I go, oh, my God, I ran out of room. Now I've got extra. And we're going to bake it covered for about half an hour. All gets all nice and good and melded together and bubbly and like that. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Now we're going to take the cover off. You remember those tomato slices and the shredded Parmesan? Mm-hmm. We didn't put them in, right? And you're going, what did we do with them? Well, we're going to put them on the top. We're going to take our tomato slices and put it on the top. We're going to put the Parmesan on top of that. We're going to put it back in the oven. And we are going to bake it for about 15 minutes until it gets nice and all heated through and bubbly and yummy and kind of brownish on top. We are done. When you take this out of the oven, first of all, it is extremely hot. And so you don't want people to burn their mouths. But second of all, if you let it sit for about 10 minutes, you will have a better product because it will have kind of condensed. It will have firmed up. Yeah. So let it sit. Let it sit for a few minutes before, maybe 10 minutes, before you actually serve it. Which means that this is also a wonderful dish for taking with you warm and then reheating it, or even if you don't have any way to reheat it. It's very, very hot. You pack it up and you come with it, and it'll stay really nice. So it's a wonderful dish in that respect. So I see our time together is nearly up. My goodness, that went fast. Yes. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last 5 are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.